welcome to Volume 43, Number 39 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine, brought to you by the Great Yarmouthan District Talking Newspaper Association. This edition is published on Friday, the 29th of September, 2023. And in the news this week, a body is discovered at a house in the town. Questions are asked about the merger of two charities. We welcome a Ukrainian balloon business, and the town's Russian spies are in the High Court. Hi, I'm Graham, your presenter, and I'm joined by Desney, your newsreader for the week, who, as usual, also takes a look at the coming week's TV. Yes, all the details on your local news and events, and with no birthdays this week, we head straight to Desney for the first batch of local news.
A man living in Great Yarmouth who has been charged with spying for Russia has appeared in court. Orin Rusev, a Bulgarian national, appeared at Westminster Magistrates Court on Tuesday, September the 26th. The 45-year-old was arrested in February while living at an address in Princes Road in Great Yarmouth. He appeared in court with four other Bulgarians charged with the same offence via video link. Rusev is accused of conspiring to gather information that would be useful to an enemy between August 2020 and February this year, alongside a man and a woman of Harrow, North West London, a man from Greenford, West London, and a man from Churchway, North West London. The five were charged with conspiring to collect information intended to be directly or indirectly useful to an enemy for a purpose prejudicial to the safety and interest of the state between August the 30th, 2020 and February the 8th, 2023. The court heard that they are alleged to be part of a network conducting surveillance on behalf of the Russian state and that a large part took place abroad, but coordination was based in the UK. The defendants, who were arrested by the Metropolitan Police Counter-Terrorism Command in February under the Official Secrets Act, only spoke to confirm they could hear and see the court to state their names and their dates of birth. Rusev and two others were previously charged on February the 11th, 2023, with possession of false identity documents with improper intention under Section 4 of the Identity Documents Act 2010. The trio appeared at the Old Bailey in July to face those charges. The court heard that all five defendants were arrested in February this year for offences contrary to the Official Secrets Act. The five defendants were remanded into custody until their next appearance at the Old Bailey on October the 13th by Deputy Chief Magistrate Tan Ikram. The world's last seagoing paddle steamer has made a welcome return to the region. On Wednesday, PS Waverley collected passengers from Southwold Pier in Suffolk for a sell-out trip on its way to Tower Bridge in London, with large crowds turning out to witness the occasion. It was part of a cruise of the River Thames and a floodlit trip to Tower Bridge. With passengers from Norfolk joining the cruise, they were collected by coach in Great Yarmouth at 8:30 a.m. and taken to Southwold, where they departed at 10 a.m. The cruise headed to Clacton to arrive on Wednesday afternoon and is eventually due to reach London Pier at 8:25 p.m. It was all part of Waverley's 2023 London and Thames Estuary timetable that operates from September the 22nd to October the 8th. A spokesman for Waverley Excursions said, "What a welcome from Southwold this morning, Wednesday, September the 27th, as Waverley made her annual call at the Suffolk town. Thanks to the owners of Southwold Pier for allowing Waverley to call." Built in 1946, P.S. Waverley has carried passengers since its maiden voyage to Loch Goyahead and Arrochar in 1947. Police will target antisocial behaviour across the Great Yarmouth area following the latest two Safer Neighbourhood meetings. Officers from Great Yarmouth Police held two Safer Neighbourhood Action Panel, SNAP, priority setting meetings earlier this month to discuss policing and crime issues in the town and Caister and coastal villages. At the Great Yarmouth SNAP meeting held on September the 7th at the St Nicholas Priory Primary School, police said they will be tackling antisocial behaviour reported around St George's Park, the theatre area and the stairwells of the Middlegate Estate, with specific attention being paid to Tollhouse Street. At the Caister and Coastal Villages SNAP meetings held on September the 14th at the Village Hall in Scrapby, it was decided officers would target antisocial behaviour and young people drinking. Police will carry out patrols around Allendale Road, Caister, Station Road, Ormsby and Beach Drive, Scrapby. The next SNAP priority setting meeting for North and South Yarmouth will be held at St Nicholas Priory Primary School on December the 7th. A date has yet to be set for the next SNAP meeting for Caister and coastal villages. For more information, visit www.norfolk.police.uk/events. The Pleasure Beach on the Golden Mile has been shortlisted in three categories at the UK Theme Park Awards, walking away with a silver in Best Seaside Park in the South. The park's Director of Business Development, Aaron Jones, went to the awards held at Chessington World of Adventures on Thursday, September the 21st. Mr. Jones said, "We had an unbelievable response from judges and visitors and managed to snag the silver. It's the first time we've won an award like this and we're over the moon." The award comes after a successful summer season following a shaky start due to the weather, Mr. Jones said. "Once August started and the weather was on our side, the park was full with families," he added. At the UK Theme Park Awards, Pettit's Animal Adventure Park, Norwich's Roar Dinosaur Adventure and Wroxham's Bewilderwood were also nominated for awards. Bewilderwood won silver in the Best New Event category for its Christmas offering, and Roar won bronze for the Best Theme Park for Families. A controversial planning application to build 104 new homes in a local village has led to a community centre being packed out by concerned residents. Such was the strength of feeling about the plans by Wellington Construction that people could not all fit into the Leo Coles Pavilion for the Bradwell Parish Council meeting on Monday. Before the parish meeting, the application of 29 new homes on the land by King's Drive and 75 houses with a through road from Ollens Road and Meadowland Drive received multiple letters of objection, drawing concerns of a prospective road layout not being fit for purpose and unsafe for children and young families. Around 60 people attended the Bradwell Community Centre in what was described as a harmonious meeting. Bradwell Parish Council Chairman Harry Hamilton said, "We couldn't get them all in the door. It was a good resident turnout and a very harmonious meeting. People were just making their feelings known, which is how it should be." Residents raised concerns about a new through road on Ollins Road and Meadowland Drive being too narrow to add another 75 houses and a potential 150 or more cars. Mr. Hamilton said the Parish Council has objected to the plans to Great Yarmouth Borough Council due to the lack of infrastructure. He added, "The fact that people can't get hospital appointments or see the dentist, and yet the Borough Council seems to pursue this thing about building more and more houses. We want the infrastructure issues to be dealt with first for our residents." Mr. Hamilton also said that plans showed only one narrow road to gain access to the plot, with a prospective 29 homes by King's Drive. "That's an accident waiting to happen," he said. "Residents are not opposed to the building of new houses. They're just questioning why so many and why so big." Mr. Hamilton said the Parish Council's objection to the bid was decided before Monday's meeting. The application has now received 41 objections, 2 supporting views, 1 no objection, 1 comment, and 1 holding objection on Great Yarmouth Borough Council's planning portal. A decision is expected by November the 7th. A man has been arrested for suspected arson after a fire in the dunes in Great Yarmouth. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service were called just after 7:45 p.m. on Saturday, September the 23rd, to a fire in the marram grass on the beach near Sandown Road in Great Yarmouth. One crew from Great Yarmouth's fire station attended and dealt with the incident using backpacks, sprayers and hand appliances. The fire was extinguished by 8:05 p.m. And next, news about hospices in Great Yarmouth. Outside an industrial estate in Galston, there is a field overgrown with weeds. For some passing motorists, the sight is probably unremarkable, but for others, it is a source of frustration. In August 2013, those 7 acres off Sidegate Road were bought by East Coast Hospice. The charity planned to build a 10-bed hospice on the land. The proposed facility even had a name, Margaret Chadd House. 10 years later, however, the field is still empty, and the fate of the hospice is as unclear as ever. Last March, the charity merged with Ipswich-based St. Elizabeth Hospice, a move that was hailed as a step forward for palliative care service in the region. But at the time, there was no mention of Margaret Chadd House. Galston man Malcolm Metcalf, 89, was one of those people who poured his heart and soul into raising funds for East Coast Hospice, ECH. In 2014, he travelled across the USA and 2 years later completed a bus ride around the UK, raising £20,000 for the charity. But on Monday, September the 25th, he said, "It seems they will never build on the ground in Galston. I'm bitterly disappointed. I'm not very happy about it. Hundreds of people sponsored me and raised £20,000 for that hospice." He said that when people donated money, they did not know that ECH was going to merge with St. Elizabeth Hospice. "People keep asking me, what's happened to all that money? The field is full of weeds and nothing has been done for ages. It's not what the people want," he said. A spokesperson for St. Elizabeth East Coast Hospice said the charity is conducting a feasibility study into how they can effectively use existing assets to develop end-of-life care in this area. The study is scheduled to be completed by March next year. The spokesperson added, "We recognise fundraising for sustainable hospice care in the area is a deep commitment from volunteers and supporters. And we have huge respect for all the East Coast Hospice supporters who have done so much already to build the funds raised to date for Great Yarmouth and Waveney. Our shared goal now is to make sure these funds are put to the maximum benefit for high quality, sustainable hospice care into the future for the people of Great Yarmouth and Waveney. Collectively, we need to ensure that any proposed ways forward are affordable and sustainable. According to the charity, the work of East Coast Hospice has provided a strong foundation for the now united St. Elizabeth East Coast Hospice. We believe this collaboration is the best opportunity to join forces towards a single vision for the area, and one which will achieve the ambition shared by both hospices and the community of delivering an enhanced end-of-life and palliative care model for Great Yarmouth and Waveney, the spokesperson added. Another person who is passionate about the plans for the hospice is Penny Carpenter, a borough councillor in Great Yarmouth. She said, "If the charity's intention is to build a hospice, that's fine. But if the intention is not to put anything there, what's going on with the land?" She said that people in the area currently have no choice regarding end-of-life care. You either end up lying in a hospital ward among living patients, or you die at home. I've always thought that dragging families through a hospital to see loved ones at the end of their life is not appropriate. A loud hospital ward is not the right place. Hospices manage it so well, but it's something that's sadly lacking here. I would just like an answer. Are they going to build it or not? ECH was formed in 2007 and said its new palliative care centre would be open by November 2020 following a multi-million pound fundraising drive. No bricks have been laid yet at the charity's Sidegate Road site, and ECH admitted taking a financial hit due to the COVID pandemic. In 2021, this paper reported the charity's accounts revealed it made a loss of £74,500 in the year 2019 to 2020, taking in the first month of the pandemic. A new location for Starbucks. High Street coffee giant Starbucks is eyeing up Great Yarmouth for a new location, but has yet to reveal any key details. The brand has confirmed it is set to open a new branch in Great Yarmouth, with plans to expand into the popular Gapton Hall retail park on the west side of town. Starbucks currently has only one store in Great Yarmouth at Market Gates. A spokeswoman said, "We look forward to bringing the Starbucks experience to more customers in Great Yarmouth in the near future, and will be in touch once we have more specific plans to share." There is speculation the coffee chain will move into a disused unit between Pizza Hut and Halfords near the A47 Gapton roundabout, which was formerly a Carphone warehouse, but no location has been officially confirmed. The news comes shortly after Starbucks announced it had plans to open more than 100 shops in the UK following a jump in sales. The cafe giant said it aims to invest £30 million in its UK operation through store openings, as well as carrying out refurbishments to existing sites.
More news in just a while. First though, following up from last week's advice from the fire service, some hints and tips from Trading Standards.
Hi, I'm Stephen. I'm the Communities Officer for Norfolk County Council Trading Standards. I'm going to give you a few bits of advice and tips around staying safe from scams and rogue traders. So, always be on your guard for telephone cold calls. Scammers will often claim to be calling from well-known companies, organisations, banks or government departments. Some calls start as recorded messages, others as live calls, with the message given in the call designed to panic the recipient into participating with it. If you receive a telephone cold call, remember, don't assume a caller is genuine just because they have some details about you, such as a name or address. Take your time, don't be rushed. Trust your instincts, they're usually right. If it any doubt about a call, just hang up. Be wary of claims or offers made during telephone cold calls and never give or confirm personal or financial details. Your bank or the police will never ask for bank details for you to withdraw cash to be collected or to transfer money to another safe account over the phone. If you regularly receive cold calls, a call blocking device could help reduce this. Have a chat with your phone provider about services they offer or find out about call blocking units which are available. If you're approached at home by a doorstep cold caller, we always advise never deal with cold callers looking to undertake work on or around your property. Never agree to have work done by somebody who's just passing or take a cold caller's word that that work needs to be done at all. Never allow a cold caller access to your home, roof or garden, even if they're offering to do tasks for free or a very small fee. And never pay for work before it's completed. When looking to have work done on or around your property, only deal with reputable companies that have been researched and chosen yourself and you've obtained a written quotation from before commencing the work. If you're looking for a trader you can trust, try a Norfolk Trusted Trader, the approved trader scheme from Norfolk County Council Trading Standards. To search our directory and to make contact with a member, you can visit our website, norfolk.gov.uk/trusted trader, or call 0333 444 2196. A no cold calling sticker on your door could also help to dissuade cold callers. You can request these free of charge by calling the Norfolk County Council Customer Service Centre on 0344 800 8020. If you are thinking about home repairs or improvements, we always ask people to think about check, just to help them to plan for this work. And check is C, compare. Speak with multiple tradespeople to compare. Try and get at least three quotes. Have a chat with family or friends for recommendations or find a Norfolk Trusted Trader. Take your time. Legitimate traders won't rush you to make a decision. H, history. Ask for the trader's references. Look at recommendations and reviews, and if they're there, check them out. E, establish. Make sure you establish all the details. What is the work that will be carried out? When will the trader start? Who will be doing the work and how much will it cost? Remember, a quote is always more binding than an estimate. C, contract. Ensure everything is recorded and ask for a contract for the work. K, keep all the paperwork. You will need this if there's any ever problems or issues.
Thanks, Stephen. Well, someone who would probably have benefited from safety advice is the lady in the following tale. Yes, it's Andy with another from the Weird Norfolk series.
And now another in the oft Weird Norfolk stories. And this one is the legend of Stiffkey's screaming cockler. On nights where dense fog rolls in across the cold and lonely salt marshes, her screams ring out towards the village. The drowned cockler of Stiffkey returns, full of rage. Others have reported seeing poor Nancy, or rather her spirit, water pouring from her mouth as she screams. seaweed clinging to her hair, spite remaining in her heart. The tale of the screaming cockler is a classic Norfolk ghost story that comes from one of the country's prettiest villages, with its quaint flint cottages and winding river. The village is noted for its cockles, known as Skifty Blues, or to use the older, more traditional name, Stewky Blues. The blue-tinged shellfish usually being found about an inch under muddy sand. Traditionally, the cockles were raked from the mud by women from the village, washed in seawater and later steamed and eaten fresh with pepper and vinegar. This tale, passed down through the generations, transports us back to the early 19th century when Stifkey was a working village of fishermen and cocklers. Cockling was unforgiving work. Summers were blisteringly hot and winters deathly cold as the women waded through deep mud to find the treasure that would help feed their families. It was also a dangerous job, with stretches of stinking sand and unpredictable fast-moving tides flooding the twisting creeks twice daily. Women tried to stay on the marshes until they'd filled the sack. Payment was by the sackload. And then they'd face the trek back to the village, lugging their haul. The tale has it that the village women, including headstrong Nancy, were working on a day when the cockles weren't presenting themselves as readily as usual on Blacknock Mud Flat. As the day wore on, those that filled their sack left, while others miserably realised that they weren't going to reach their sack load and pooled resources, suggesting to Nancy she'd do the same. But she was determined. She would not go home without her money. As she worked, on the distant horizon, the waves were beginning to roll in over the flat marshes, and the water in the creek was starting to rise. With the wind picking up and the sky darkening more by the minute, Nancy worked on. The seawater rose to her thighs, and then the fog began to envelop her. A blanket of grey, which left her disoriented and unsure which way to walk back to the safety of Stifkey. Norfolk Marsh people had a name for this fog, roke. Suddenly, Nancy realised the danger she was in, and as she desperately tried to wade through the deepening water through a roke so dense she couldn't make out any landmarks, she began to scream. From the village, her desperate cries for help immediately sent villagers to the edge of the marshes and to their small boats to try and navigate their way towards the whaling. Some stories say that as Nancy realised that no one could reach her, her screams turned to rageful spite as she cursed the salt marsh, the roke and the sea, and finally God himself. And then, suddenly, silence. With no voice to guide them, and the realisation that the silence could mean only one thing, the search was called off until first light, when the roke had lifted and the tide receded. It didn't take long to find Nancy, and she was lying drowned on Blacknock, her cockle sack tied to her wrist, her body wreathed in seaweed. Nancy was laid to rest in the village church. Or so those that buried her thought. On the first night that a roke enveloped the marsh after her death, Nancy's screams were heard in Stifkey once again, along with her dreadful curses which echoed along this treacherous piece of coastline. And it is said she can still be heard on occasion, or even more terrifyingly, seen through the fog, water pouring from her mouth, and seaweed trapped in her hair.
In Dublin's fair city, where girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone. As she wheeled her wheelbarrow through streets broad and narrow, bright cockles and mussels, alive, 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 oh, alive, alive, oh, grind cockles and mussels, alive.
fishmonger, and sure it was no wonder, for so were her father and mother before. And they each wheeled their barrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
She died of the fever, and no one could save her, and that was the end of sweet Molly Malone.
But a ghost wheels her barrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels.
Alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, crying cockles and mussels. Alive, alive, oh.
Sing something simple, as cares go by. Sing something simple, just you and I. We'll sing the old songs like you used to do. We'll sing something simple.
I couldn't resist that. Mike Sam's Singers. For many years, a Sunday afternoon tradition on the Light programme and Radio 2, singing the simple tale of Molly Malone, who ended up in a similar state to Stiff Key's Nancy. What is it with cockles, I ask? OK, it's time for more news from Desney, followed very closely by her look at next week's TV.
Norfolk's trains are liable for disruption, as many will be cancelled next month due to maintenance works. Network Rail will be conducting essential track maintenance and timber renewals for 5 consecutive weekends from October the 7th through to November the 5th. The works will see services cancelled between Norwich and Cromer, Sheringham, Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft. Bus replacement services will be available for Greater Anglia passengers travelling between Norwich and Sheringham each weekend, except for October the 14th and 15th, when the railway will remain open. Buses will call at all stations except Gunton, which Network Rail said is inaccessible by roads. On the weekends of October the 28th and 29th and November the 4th and 5th, buses will also replace trains between Norwich and Great Yarmouth, calling at Brundle Gardens, Brundle, Lingwood and Acle, Lingwood and Reedham, calling at Cantley, Norwich and Lowestoft, calling at Alton Broad North, Buckenham, Haddiscoe and Somerleyton stations also cannot be served by rail replacement buses due to inaccessible roads. Mark Walker, Network Rail Anglia Route Infrastructure Engineer, said, "We're focused on delivering important maintenance tasks to maintain the safe and efficient running of the railway. Completing these tasks will directly contribute to the reliability of train journeys and safety, which is our top priority. I want to thank all our customers for their patience while we carry out these essential maintenance tasks. Jamie Burles, Greater Anglia Managing Director, said, "This work is extremely important to help maintain the safe and reliable running of the railway. We would like to thank customers for their patience and understanding while this work is carried out. A rail replacement service will run while the work takes place, and passengers are advised to check before they travel and allow more time for their journey." Financial concerns. Leaders at Norfolk County Council have insisted the authority is not at risk of bankruptcy, despite a series of local authorities getting into financial difficulties. Birmingham City Council recently declared it could not balance its books, while councils in Hackney, Northamptonshire, Croydon, Thurrock and Woking have previously issued Section 114 notices, effectively declaring them bankrupt. Conservative-run County Hall needs to find £46.2 million of cuts and savings in the next financial year. But leaders said they were not in the sort of situation other councils have found themselves in. Liberal Democrat County Councillor Saul Penfold, at a meeting of the full council on Tuesday, September the 26th, asked whether leaders were concerned pressures on children's services spending, the limbo over the Norwich Western Link and the crisis in adult social care could trigger a financial meltdown at County Hall. Kay Mason Billig, leader of the council, said, "We have all been very concerned, having seen what happened to Birmingham. Having looked into the reasons behind that, we can see that this is due to an issue which hadn't been dealt with in terms of equal pay. I can confirm that Norfolk County Council tackled this particular problem over 10 years ago. So that issue will not arise here. I can also confirm we are working towards a balanced budget this year, and I have every confidence we will achieve that." This council has always been run on a very prudent line. Although we had increased pressures from children's services and adult social care, which we have to provide, I am confident this council will not face a Section 114 notice in the near future. Andrew Jameson, the councillor's deputy leader and cabinet member for finance, added, "Let me say categorically that I am able to report that it is my judgment that this authority is on a sound financial footing." Mr. Jameson said, "It was getting harder for councils to weather the storm, but said we have done all we can locally to safeguard our financial resilience." Around 65,000 people attended this year's Out There Festival in Great Yarmouth, organisers have said. The festival celebrated its 15th birthday with more wacky and wonderful performances by artists from 17 countries on September the 15th, 16th and 17th. Following this year's offering, organisers Out There announced the 2024 festival will take place in May to fit in better with the school year. Joe McIntosh, Out There's artistic director, said 4,000 children took part in its circus projects and we want to include more in the shows and engage with more young people. Mr. McIntosh said he hoped to extend the two-day festival with one event on Friday to 3 or 4 days during the spring half-term week in 2024. "We also think we can really boost visitor numbers following the May bank holiday and actually have bigger audiences and spread the festival out," he said. Date change was criticised by some as the festival's new date takes place on the same weekend as the Great Yarmouth Comic Con. The organisers of both events are meeting next week to discuss cross-promotion and ways to support attendance between the two attractions. A dream to convert a disused relic of Great Yarmouth's fishing heritage into the UK's premier location for circus and street arts has received a major funding boost. The Ice House on Bridge Road was included in the list of 12 National Heritage Sites awarded £12.12 million worth of grants by the National Lottery. The Grade 2 listed building has been awarded £1,968,061 from the Heritage Fund, aiding its transformation into the UK Centre of Excellence in Outdoor Circus and Arts. Built between 1851 and 1892, the Ice House was once a vital asset in the town's once thriving fishing industry, enabling the storage of freshly caught seafood before transportation to London's Billingsgate fish market. In the mid-19th century, the Ice House stood at the forefront of an industrial revolution that would propel the town's fortunes to new heights. However, as modern technologies advanced, the Ice House fell into disuse, serving for some time as a grain store. The completion of the project, which is being led by Out There Arts, aims to make the town recognised as the UK capital for circus and outdoor arts. Joe McIntosh, Out There Art Chief Executive, said, "We are absolutely delighted with this award. It is the culmination of over 5 years of work for the Out There Arts team. The team has worked tirelessly to develop the plans and funding for the Ice House, and much of this was worked on with the community through community consultations." Mr. McIntosh added that all the funding necessary for the project has now been secured, and building work is due to commence early next year. "This will transform a historically important building in Great Yarmouth's history from an underused storage shed into a publicly accessible cultural hub," Mr. McIntosh added. "Thousands of people will benefit from this, and it will strengthen Great Yarmouth's year-round cultural offer." In Lowestoft, the town's Grade 2 listed town hall received the lion's share of the lottery funding, securing a grant of £3,257,512. An elderly woman has been taken to hospital after being hit by a car in Great Yarmouth. Police were called to Southtown Road at 5:30 p.m. on Monday, September the 25th, after reports of a collision involving a car and a pedestrian. This incident involved a silver Suzuki Vitara, which hit an elderly woman near the junction with Queen Anne's Road. The woman was taken to hospital with serious injuries, where she remains. Police officers are appealing for witnesses. A woman has won £133,000 at a Great Yarmouth casino just weeks after another lucky winner pocketed a huge sum. The mystery woman, who wishes to remain anonymous, is the second person to win big at Grosvenor Casino in a matter of weeks. The prize was won on the blackjack game Ace-King suited, and comes after a 70-year-old woman won £82,000 with a royal flush on three-card poker in August. After scooping the £133,000 jackpot, the winner was overcome with emotion and is planning to take her family on a luxury holiday to celebrate. Gemma Allen, general manager of Grosvenor Casino, Great Yarmouth, said, "This is the first time ever that our casino has enjoyed not one, but two massive jackpot wins in quick succession. The atmosphere in the casino was electric when she found out that she had won the progressive jackpot, and everyone was over the moon for her. Lady Luck is certainly shining down at Grand Grosvenor Casino, Great Yarmouth, and we're staking our claim to be one of the luckiest venues in the country to win big right now. The need for more work on Great Yarmouth's long-awaited new £120 million bridge means council leaders still cannot say when it will open. The Third River Crossing had been due to open in time for the seaside town's summer season, only for an unexploded bomb and the discovery of a vole burrow to trigger delays. Council leaders said in July that the Herring Bridge would open in September. But at a council meeting on Tuesday, September the 26th, they admitted that would not be happening. Labour County Councillor Mike Smith-Clare asked, now that Volgate had been resolved, when the bridge would open. Graham Plant, the council's cabinet member for Highways, Transport and Infrastructure, said he could not give a precise date. He said, I was at a meeting yesterday discussing this. There are some issues which need to be sorted out. There's some further work to be done. I cannot give a precise date. We haven't been given one by the contractor. We've been given an about date, but I don't want to give you an about date. I will give you an exact date once I know it. Richard Heyman, construction manager to Bam Farron's joint venture, the contractor delivering the Third River Crossing on behalf of the council, said, we are slightly behind where we wanted to be at this stage, which is the result of resequencing some of the works, finalising some of the utility works and completing the additional improvement works at Harfrey's Junction. But we hope to provide further updates as soon as possible and thank the public for their continued patience and support. Mr. Heyman added, I can confirm there are no issues with voles or the operation of the bridge leaves, the lifting sections of the structure. The exclusion zone around the potential vole burrow discovered earlier this year remains in place, but is not impacting our work programme. There are still some highway works to complete on the Galston side of the river, and commissioning a new bridge like this is a highly complex operation. A number of systems and processes need to be in place, and we are working with the Port Authority to complete this as quickly as possible. Only once we enter the initial phase of operation to marine vessels will we be in a position to provide a likely date for the full opening to all traffic. A mother pushing a pram has been hit by a vehicle in Great Yarmouth. The incident happened in Hall Plain near Regent Street at 9:46 a.m. on Wednesday, September the 27th. One ambulance, a rapid response vehicle, and an ambulance officer vehicle attended, and the woman and baby were taken to James Paget Hospital for further assessment and care. Heavy traffic was reported in the area at the time of the incident. A pub that closed during the COVID pandemic is now applying for a new licence. John and Deborah Beavers have applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council, GYBC, for a new licence for the Wheelwright Arms on Beccles Road in Galston. The application is asking for permission to sell alcohol and play recorded music from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. every day. The landlord also wants to be able to have live music and anything similar to live music, recorded music and dance from 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. on Friday and Saturday. The Wheelwright Arms, a 150-year-old pub, closed during the COVID pandemic. In 2020, Mrs. Beavers applied to GYBC to convert the pub into a house. The council permitted this, but on the condition the change of use could be carried out only by Mrs. Beavers, and that if the premises ceased to be occupied by her, the building would have to return to being a pub. Mrs. Beavers appealed to the planning inspectorate, but saw her case dismissed. The pub has twice been up for auction, in 2021 and again earlier this year. And another pub in the news, the Smokehouse, a restaurant hoping to keep a cluster of wooden cabins which helped the business stay open during the COVID pandemic. Katie Newport, landlady of the Smokehouse Bar and Grill in Ormsby St Margaret, has applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council, GYBC, to retain 5 outbuildings and timber cladding applied to the original building's modern rear extension. The outbuildings, all made of timber, include a small toilet, a barbecue, a servery, and 2 outdoor seating areas. These were built on the site in August 2020, during the COVID pandemic, to ensure customers were safely served food and drink. According to documents submitted with the application, the outbuildings allowed the business to operate through the COVID pandemic, and since then they continue to be used, particularly during the summer months. Retention of the premises as a successful restaurant will also ensure the long-term maintenance of the existing listed building, the application states. The original building dates from the 19th century. In 2021, the restaurant, an American-style diner, won the Best Norfolk Restaurant and Best Business at the East of England Business Awards. A block of public toilets in a Norfolk village has been vandalised. The facility on the street in Acle was damaged overnight between 5 p.m. on Sunday, August the 27th, and 8 a.m. on Monday, August the 28th. One of the toilet pans in the men's room was knocked over, while paper dispensers were ripped off the walls and a door was broken. Pauline James, Acle Parish Council clerk, said it was the second time the toilets had been vandalised over the summer. The toilets are used by visitors, people with young children, and passengers using the nearby bus stop, among others. "It's a shame. It spoils the appearance of the village," Mrs. James said. Broadland District Council own the toilets and fund Acle Parish Council to look after them. Last year, the Parish Council spent £23,000 maintaining the facility, of which £13,000 was from Broadland District Council. Police have said that all lines of inquiry have been exhausted without identifying a suspect. Here's a little bit about what's on TV next week. I've cheated a bit because I've been really quite busy this week, queuing up and getting to the Paget for my COVID jab and going into Yarmouth for an optician's appointment. And both of those have taken a long time. It's the travelling there and back, as well as the queues to get into the hospital car park and the queues to get into Yarmouth. So I haven't had as much time here to look through the TV programmes. So I've cheated a bit and bought myself TV Choice, and lo and behold, on the first page, 6 shows you must not miss. They've done my work for me. So let's see what they decide. They've chosen a comedy called Ghosts. This is series 5, and I believe it's the final series. So some of you may be familiar with this programme. It's based on the fact that Alison inherited from somebody that she hardly knew existed in her family an old house, a big mansion with lots of rooms and lots of ghosts. Now, they didn't become apparent to her until after she'd had a bump on the head in one of the very early episodes, and she ended up being able to see these ghosts and talk to them. But nobody else seems to be able to do that. I think her husband does believe that she can actually see these ghosts, but the comedy is all based on that. And this, as I say, is the fifth series, so maybe you've seen some episodes. I've seen one or two. I haven't really followed it all the way through. But this is the last one, so if you enjoyed it, you'll want to see the last series. If you haven't enjoyed it, you might like to dip in and see whether it is your thing. The next show on their list is a new factual show. It's called Simply Beckham. I think we can all guess that that must be about David Beckham. And it says that this series follows David Beckham's career from his working class roots to one of the most successful footballers of all time. Now, he owns a football team and he has a family of his own, so all that's covered as well. So if you've enjoyed anything that you've seen about David Beckham during his successful life, then you might like to see this. That is on Netflix. So I hope you've got your Netflix subscription up to date if you want to watch anything like that. You won't find that on terrestrial yet. They also, TV Choice also recommends a soap this week, and they're recommending EastEnders, so there must be some dramatic happening. It says Stacey's nightmare continues, so if you're a regular EastEnders fan, that will mean something to you, and I'm sure you're planning to watch already. If you're not an EastEnders fan, you probably won't be tuning in for a one-off dramatic episode. The last three programmes all come under the umbrella of drama. Boiling Point is a new drama. I understand it's a TV sequel. Well, it tells me here it's the TV sequel to the hit film, which finds Andy Jones, who's played by Stephen Graham, recovering from a heart attack by hitting the bottle. Doesn't sound a very good way of recovering from a heart attack. Anyway, I believe it's one of those things where at the end of the film, which was a couple of years ago, I believe, he was thought to have died from this particular heart attack, but for the sake of these spin-offs, he was just quite ill. And now, as I say, he's recovering. And here we are, 6 months after the end of that film, apparently, and there's another interesting series to be made out of it. The next one is a crime drama. It's called Payback. And it says Lexi Noble, played by Morven Christie, has an idyllic family life, but that falls apart as she becomes entangled in a police operation to topple crime lord Cal Morris after her husband is attacked. Finally, the drama gets a bit lighter. It's All Creatures Great and Small. Oh, I remember so fondly the original of that on BBC many years ago. This one is on Channel 5 on Thursdays, and it's set in the spring of 1940. And despite the war having broken out, Helen, who I think is the wife of one of the vets, and the locals still enjoy the duck race. I think if you want something less dramatic than Boiling Point or Payback, you will enjoy this much calmer veterinary practice set in Yorkshire and the tales from there. So once again, to recap, we have Ghosts, which takes place on BBC One on Friday nights at 8:30. We have a new factual series about David Beckham, which is on Netflix from Wednesday. We have a new drama called Boiling Point on BBC One on Sunday at 9 p.m. We have EastEnders, the soap, which is on at 7:30 every weekday night except Friday. We have a drama called Payback on Wednesday at ITV, 9 p.m. And All Creatures Great and Small is on Channel 5 on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Some of the programmes I've enjoyed watching this week are programmes that have restarted since I last spoke to you. The programmes like The Great British Bake Off, that started this week, so we're in for a good time with that. That's 8 p.m. on a Tuesday. Strictly Come Dancing, well, this is going to be the first week when one of the dancers will be eliminated. And that's this week, it's at 6:20. 6:20 till 8:35, followed by a new series of Michael McIntyre and The Wheel. On Wednesday on BBC, both BBC One and BBC Two have programmes that I've enjoyed watching in the past. I have watched one episode so far of The Celebrity Race Across the World, which I think mainly concentrates from Morocco. It started in Morocco and it finishes, I think, somewhere in the, well, the Arctic, I think. Close to, anyway, North Europe, very high up, very cold from the look of the pictures I've seen in trailers. This one, though, is a celebrity race across the world. The ones I've seen before have been just ordinary pairings. Mothers and sons, brothers and sisters, friends. Don't have to be family members. But the celebrity race across the world has only four pairs in this particular race. And they are Billy Munger, who was a Formula 4 racing driver when he was very young and had a very nasty accident in which he lost both legs. So since then, he's done a lot of commentary and a lot of television work. And he is not going to let the fact that he has one, well, should I say, I believe he has one amputated above the knee and one below the knee. So he has one partly amputated and one almost totally amputated. But he is not going to let that stop him from taking part in what is called the celebrity race across the world. The other contestants are Alex Beresford. Oh, Billy Munger, by the way, is with his sister, Bonnie. Alex Beresford, the weatherman. He is travelling with his father. And Mel Blatt from the girl band All Saints. She is travelling with her mother. And the fourth pair is Harry Judd, the drummer from McFly. And he is also travelling with his mother. The idea is that they have a very, very limited budget. They can't fly anywhere. So for celebrities who probably, we may imagine they see the world, but actually fly to these foreign destinations just see probably the stadium that they are appearing in, or the theatre, or whatever the complex is. So they don't actually know much about setting off on their own with a limited budget and sorting out their own ways of getting there. Their money is so small that they are also given a list of places where they might find employment to just eke out their budget a bit more. So it's quite an interesting programme to see how these people work. And it's usually the parent who has some better idea of travel. I think it is Mel Blatt's mother who, she said, was in the army. So she's got quite a lot of skills that Mel doesn't have. And she's travelled the world. And they've all got, between them, enough skills to try and sort themselves out. Quite good fun to see some of them working. I think Billy and his sister Bonnie had a pretty smelly time working in a tannery on their way to get some a bit more cash to help them on their journeys. They've got a couple of bus journeys under their belts, and so they needed a bit more money. And they were, well, he was carrying leather bits around the place because his sister Bonnie was treading pigeon droppings into the leather skins to soften them up. Well, I don't think that's a job that I particularly favour. Anyway, that's four more programmes that you might be interested in. Great British Bake Off, Channel 4, 8pm, Strictly Come Dancing, 6:20 on Saturday on BBC One. Celebrity Race Across the World, Wednesday, BBC One at 9 o'clock. And the final one, DNA Family Secrets. A little bit on the lines of Who Do You Think You Are? Except that these people are not celebrities. They're just ordinary. Well, I don't know. Is anybody ordinary? They have some extraordinary things to tell once their DNA secrets have been looked into. So until next time, I hope you enjoy some of those programmes.
The Johnny Pearson Orchestra with the theme from the original iteration of All Creatures Great and Small. Time now to get you completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
One of Norfolk's first Ukrainian refugees opened a business in Great Yarmouth on the first anniversary of her arrival in the town. Inna Vasienko arrived in the town on April the 6th, 2022, with her husband, son, two daughters and two grandmothers. Under the Homes for Ukraine scheme, business owner Ricky Christensen and his wife Tatiana hosted Mrs. Vasienko and her family. Launching on April 6, 2023, Mrs. Vasienko, Mr. and Mr. and Mrs. Christensen opened Norfolk Balloon Designs at the Priory Centre, providing bespoke decorations for weddings, birthdays and other occasions. Mrs. Vasienko said that before she left Kiev, she and her husband had run a successful balloon business for 15 years. "We served supermarket openings, anniversaries and big weddings," she said. "We had 25 employees, but after the invasion, it all came to an end." so we are starting all over. It is smaller, but we hope it will be just as successful. Mrs. Vasienko said during the early days of the Russian invasion, she and her family had to evacuate their home hourly due to bombing campaigns. One day, debris from a nearby shell hit her home and she knew she needed to leave for the safety of her family. At this time, Mr. and Mrs. Christensen, who previously worked in Ukraine, called friends in the country to see if they could help those seeking refuge. 2 weeks later, Mrs. Vasienko, her husband, children and grandmothers arrived at Mr. Christensen's home. "We believe Inna and her family were the first Ukrainians in Norfolk," Mr. Christensen said. "We had to get them all registered and nobody knew quite what to do. Mr. and Mrs. Christensen helped the Ukrainian couple find work in casinos before banding together to create Norfolk Balloon Designs. The company specialises in unique displays for weddings, birthdays, baby showers and gender reveal parties. Norfolk Balloon Designs will also be providing decorations for an Oktoberfest party and will be at an upcoming wedding fair in Sprouston." Mrs. Vasienko added, "Life is good now. Step by step, things are getting better." An investigation has been launched after the body of a man described as a proper nice man and decent fella was found. Emergency services, including police and ambulance, were called to Napoleon Place, Great Yarmouth, behind the Hippodrome Circus and close to the town's Marina Centre and Golden Mile on Saturday, September the 22nd. A terraced property had been cordoned off by police, who remained on the scene throughout the day on the Sunday. The alarm was raised by concerned neighbours who had not seen the man, named locally as window cleaner Clive Benson, for a number of days. His body was recovered from the property after neighbours said they managed to get into the property and found him. One of them, a 44-year-old man who wanted to remain anonymous, said, "I looked in and saw him. He was dead. He said Clive was going to be missed." A 72-year-old neighbour who did not want to be named said another neighbour had asked if she had seen Clive. That woman was concerned as she had not seen him and had been knocking at his door. The neighbour, who also had not seen him for a few days, called the police, who asked her to check if there was unopened mail as well as his work van, which was parked nearby. While she was on the phone to police, another neighbour tried the door, which was unlocked, and her husband, 74, saw his body on the floor. Police and ambulance crews were dispatched, and forensic teams also later arrived. The woman said she was shocked. She said he was a good neighbour and knew a lot of people. He was very friendly. If he wanted anything, he always helped. He was just a nice guy. She and her husband, who have lived in the town for about 4 years, said Clive, who used to work as a door supervisor in the town, had recently been visited by his son, who was in the army. Her 75-year-old husband said Clive usually kept himself to himself, but could talk for England. He said he was a proper, nice and decent fella. He used to go out for a cigarette and everyone would stop and chat to him. He added, "It was devastating, to be honest. I couldn't talk to the police. I started crying." As well as working on the doors in the town, Clive also liked to dance prior to COVID, although he latterly had had problems with diabetes. Clive's cat had also not been seen for a few days. A 25-year-old woman who wanted to remain anonymous said, "My neighbour told me he died. I heard her talking on the phone and saw the ambulance. I ran outside and they told me he was inside. They told me he'd died." In describing Clive, she said, "He was really nice. If I had an Amazon delivery and was not home, he would go out and take the order and give it back to me or my brother." Gobi Mohan, store manager of the nearby express store in St Peter's Road, said, "Clive was a lovely man and great customer. He said he used to come in every day and was very friendly." Another man living in the area described Clive as a good man who was friendly and helped everyone. Officers were thought to have been conducting door-to-door inquiries on Saturday night, while a police patrol car remained outside the property on Sunday. Malcolm Metcalfe's bucket list. In the past 7 months, 89-year-old Malcolm Metcalfe has edited a newspaper, thrown axes, flown a plane, and judged a dog show. But he's not finished. As part of his 90 before 90 challenge, the Gorston man will next travel across Norfolk in one day using 15 different modes of transport, including a police car and a chimney sweep van. Ahead of his 90th birthday in December, he has already ticked more than 80 activities off his bucket list, which is part of efforts to raise £10,000 for the Priscilla Bacon Hospice. The 76-mile, 7-hour dash across the county from Galston to King's Lynn takes place on Saturday, September the 30th. At 8 a.m, Mr. Metcalfe will step into a police van that will transport him from his home on Magdalen Way to Great Yarmouth bus station. By 8:20 a.m, he will be zipping through the streets in a Mustang car en route to Acle, and from there a chimney sweep's van will take him to the Maidshead Hotel in Norwich. There, he will switch to a Bentley, chauffeured to the new Priscilla Bacon Hospice in Norwich at 9:20 a.m. At 10 a.m, he will climb aboard a truck heading to Silfield near Wyndham, followed by a charming 1934 Wolseley car ride to Dereham. One of the day's highlights will arrive at 11:15 a.m. when he cruises in an Elvis Presley Cadillac car to Swaffham. After lunch, he will roar away on a Honda motorbike to Narborough bus stop, followed by a ride in a car built from scraps to Narborough Museum at 1:10 p.m. The excitement will continue with a three-wheeler bike ride at 1:25 p.m, then a leisurely horse and cart journey at 1:40 p.m. At 2 p.m, Mr. Metcalfe will hop on a tractor to the main road near the Carpenter's Arms bus stop, and at 2:15 p.m, he will board an XL bus to King's Lynn. The grand finale awaits at 3 p.m, when he will ride in a Formula One V8 engine racing car at Saddlebow Road stock car track. And Grapevine is hoping to have a word with Malcolm for next week's recording. Inspectors said bullying is rare at a Galston secondary school, and foundations have been laid to raise its current rating. Ofsted inspectors visited Cliff Park Ormiston Academy for a monitoring inspection in July. While the academy's rating of requires improvement remains, the school watchdog said positive steps had been taken across the school. The inspection comes as the school was downgraded from its previous good rating in October 2022, with inspectors raising concerns that reports of bullying were not always followed up. However, inspectors returned to the school on July the 18th, saying the school has now secured a solid foundation to move forward. The report said, "You have made clear your expectations of pupils' behaviour and put in place simple routines that pupils and staff understand. This means that teachers are picking up most incidents quickly. Pupils say that behaviour has improved significantly." It was also reported that pupils have been encouraged to think about how their actions and words affect others. This is having an impact, particularly with younger pupils, who say that there are no or very few incidents of prejudicial language, the report added. Inspectors also praised academy teachers for introducing swift and effective improvement measures, with lessons having carefully considered how to assure that pupils get a consistent experience. Ofsted noted that the precision of the Academy's plans and the constant review and adaptations they are making means they have secured a solid foundation to move forward. Principal Harry French said, "I am pleased to see the tireless work of every member of our school community to drive improvement and ensure we are providing a high quality education to all our students. I very much look forward to working with our whole community to ensure we continue this upward trajectory of improvement." Anglian Water will have to repay more than £20 million to customers through lower bills after it failed to meet key targets. It comes after the water company was found by regulator Ofwat to be falling short on performance standards relating to sewage leaks, customer service and reducing pollution. Following an assessment by the independent body, Anglian Water was categorised as lagging, the lowest possible category, alongside six other water providers. It will now have to pay back £22 million to customers by reducing their bills in 2024-25. It comes after the company, which is £6.8 million in debt, was identified as the worst performing in the country for self-reporting incidents of pollution. Ofwat Chief Executive David Black said that while price reductions might be welcome to bill payers, it was very disappointing news for all who want to see the water sector do better. An Anglian Water spokesman said, "We are disappointed to be listed as a lagging company. However, following two extreme climate events last year, we expected our performance to drop as our infrastructure came under unprecedented pressure. The work we've undertaken since then focuses on how we are resilient in these challenges in the future, as they are felt more acutely by our region than any other. Our proposed business plans for 2025-2030 will see our largest ever investment in securing water supplies against the risks of extreme weather." Earlier this year, Anglian Water was told it needed to improve after the Environment Agency handed it a 2-star rating for its latest annual report. It was found to be responsible for 255 pollution incidents in 2022, including 11 serious incidents. The company told county councillors earlier this year that it would take decades and millions of pounds to install the infrastructure to stop raw sewage being released into Norfolk rivers. Sarah Allen has converted a garage at her home on the Fairway in Galston into a hairdresser's called the Colour Lounge. Mrs. Allen, 41, previously had a hair salon in the town, but decided to move the business to her home. "It's better for me to be on my own, and my clients love it. They never feel rushed," she said. "Since COVID, I feel people don't like to go to busy salons anymore. They like to go where it's quieter. People are scared to go to busy places, so I feel it's a better experience for my clients," she added. "The salon operates by appointment only, with at least 15 minutes between appointments." Miss Allen has been a hairdresser for 25 years. She trained at Rare Cuts in Great Yarmouth when she was a teenager. Earlier this month, Great Yarmouth Borough Council approved the plans for the salon. The agents, Paul Robinson Partnership, said the business injects new life and economic opportunities into the neighbourhood. Mm-hmm.
That's it for this week's recording, which is copyright 2023 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. If you need to contact us, you can do so via our website at grapevinegy.org or telephone us on 07947 946 493, where you can access our regularly checked answering service. Next week, your newsreader and presenter will be Andrew, so we look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.